home for classic hits. AM 1570, 96.9, and Moon 102.7 FM. WILO, Frankfort, Lebanon, Delphi.
People ask a lot of questions about Ivy Tech Community College. Like, can an Ivy Tech degree get me a good career? Well, some say good, and some say great. In 2 years or less, you can earn an associate degree or certificate, qualifying you for some of Indiana's fastest-growing career fields and earning you an average of $37,777 the first year after graduation. Find your answers at ivytech.edu/FAQ. Then apply for free at ivytech.edu.
This is it, geese. Time to lower the altitude.
But why, Dad? It's harder to fly down there.
To get a bird's-eye view of TC trailers, son.
TC trailers?
Look, there. Over 300 trailers on the lot, including goosenecks. They have more parts than we have feathers and a full in-house repair shop. If humans aren't pulling a TC trailer, son, they're not pulling their weight. Fly in or visit tc-trailers.com.
Listen to all that cash I saved shopping at my local big deal store. I know what you're thinking. Jenny, tell me more. Well, this is a secret I love sharing. Shop your local big deal store from your phone, computer, or tablet for gift certificates at discounted prices. Automotive, pets, retail, groceries, entertainment, outdoor, restaurants, services, travel, health, beauty. It's all there. Shop and soon you'll be saving, too.
Just click on the Big Deals tab at ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, BoonCountyDailyNews.com, or CarrollCountyDailyNews.com.
Your free local online newspaper, ClintonCountyDailyNews.com, is your number one resource for information as you need it, right at your fingertips. We have news, weather, sports, obituaries, the WILO program schedule, over 40,000 community photos, online surveys, community events, and HoosierlandTV.com archives. Plus, click on the info tab to find out how you can contact your local and state representatives. Find out what the buzz is all about. ClintonCountyDailyNews.com.
When you need to know.
Probability of actual rotation is to the south and then back to the west. So that would be northwest of Colfax, along a line toward Michigantown.
On the air first from your official weather station.
Right now, the rain is basically affecting Darlington, Crawfordsville, Colfax, Frankfort, Michigantown.
The news team you've come to depend on. We are WILO.
Well, that was a quick end. Thank you, to all our sponsors who allow us to be on the air right now. And also, quick thank you to Mark Gennett for stopping in yesterday and being able to come in today and talk. We are on with our second guest next, and I'll run through the sponsors here real quick. TC Trailers, if you're not pulling a TC trailer, you're not pulling your weight. Ivy Tech Community College, changing lives. Big O Tires in Lebanon. Big deal. Save money now and 24/7 at WeLoveBigDeals.com. Boone, Clinton, and Carroll County Daily News, your free online newspapers. You can also watch via Hoosierland TV, the telecast, thanks to these fine people. Man Chevrolet, GMC in Delphi, Jerry's Body Shop, Lanen's Furniture and Mattress, Avery Home Store, Braden Business Systems, Copper Electric Services LLC, VFW Post 1110 in Frankfort, Marchand's Window Tinting, Ellis Jewelers, Witham Health Services, Tornado Roofing, Siding, and Gutters, Simplify Family Dental, Community Foundations serving Carroll, Clinton, and Howard County, Stone Alley Hardware and Industrial Supply, Wesley Manor Retirement Community, Newell Gas, Welty Exterior, Arborwood by Shoops, Big O Tires in Lebanon, Sam-I-Am Carpet Cleaning, Solidarity Community Federal Credit Union, Day and Ginn Funeral Home, Colligan Water of Boone and Clinton County, Shoops Country Foods, The Farmers Bank, 51 West Event Center, and WILO's Party Line Telecast. We thank you for helping us bring that to everyone here on HoosierlandTV.com. In-house right now, Tony Somers, Clinton County Prosecutor. And Tony, a lot has been in the news. And Mark brought it up. We were talking about AI with Carl and talking about Val Kilmer, the actor that's passed away, and his family has given the rights to be able to have all that used. But I know you follow, I mean, you deal with everything here in the county and the state, but I know you follow everything, very well versed in all areas of communication and everything. What's your thoughts on AI, and what are the problems that you can see that bringing, even to your position, to your job?
Okay, problems, perhaps, but also a boon, something that's positive. Artificial intelligence is like any other form of technology. It can be used for good or bad. Good. Val Kilmer being able to be recreated with permission of his family, and being involved in a major theatric production, even though he's passed. And we've seen other actors or actresses who've been able to be recreated in that way, sometimes just in a cameo fashion, in some recent theatric productions as well. So that seems positive in general for entertainment purposes. But then you see in other instances artificial intelligence being used to recreate images for harmful purposes. Sometimes what's referred to as a deep fake, where there's an artificial intelligence generated image that portrays, say, a person who is a political figure or a leader of a political movement doing something that's inappropriate or being put in a position that causes derision. In my line of work, where we see the artificial intelligence generated images, would be in sexual exploitation cases, where images of others are created that have sexual connotations of one type or another. And under the law, those are being treated as if they were the real thing, so to speak. And so if it were criminal to do it with the real thing, it's criminal to do it with something that's generated with artificial intelligence. Hearing your program earlier, and Carl called in and kind of conflating or attaching the idea of data centers to artificial intelligence, which is all accurate, really. Data centers are necessary to store the information that's used in artificial intelligence. And so when we talk artificial intelligence, understand we're not just talking images generated on the internet. We are actually talking about computers being used on a deep learning curve to be able to formulate ideas. So it's being used in a variety of software platforms now to write. Students are using it to write their term papers. It's being used to respond to your questions. When you ask Google a question, then AI is being used to formulate the answer that is being given to you on Google. So artificial intelligence is far more pervasive than just, you know, random images here and there. It's deeply intertwined with what is happening on the internet and with computers being used in the workplace, computers being used in entertainment.
How in someone in your field and even the criminal justice system, period, how are you able to, or what would you need to do to be able to dissect it, determine, you know, what's real, what's not, what is generated by AI and, you know, being used for criminal purposes?
We have detectives who are trained in computer forensics, and they go into the data behind the data and are able to dissect the origin of images, where they came from, whether or not they're attached to a real person or generated. And so where they came from, not only in the sense of their creation, but also in the sense of what servers the data passed through to get to an end user. And so it depends upon having that kind of expertise in law enforcement.
Have you, I know you can't speak to anything specific, but have you seen any of that come through your office?
We've had a couple of cases now where there are the deep fake type images involved. Yes.
Is that a growing concern?
Not a growing concern. It's just a concern. It's there. It's like anything else in my office. We have to be prepared. We have to be able to identify it and know how we're going to go about a prosecution when it involves that kind of wrongful act.
I know we've talked about this before, but I kind of think we need to revisit it. Just the social media, and of course, and that does go back to some of what we're already talking about, the AI and everything.
Mm-hmm.
How much does information that's out there on social media, how can that affect a criminal case or maybe evidence that's brought to you to determine whether or not there's anything out there to be able to go for charges? Or, I mean, does it play a factor whatsoever, or is it just one of those things you got to weed out?
What is happening on social media sometimes has an impact, but usually it's only on the periphery of the case. It's not in the evidence. It's not part of the evidence. But what happens on social media sometimes is related to the acts that are involved in the case. Sometimes we find evidence in posts that are made on social media where it is a post from a person who is involved in the case, whether it be a witness, a victim, or the accused. And we factor in those statements that are made on social media just as we would factor in statements that were relayed to us as a part of the investigation, or statements that were made about the events that the person made at some later point in time. We always evaluate those in the context of the evidence we already have in hand. Sometimes it adds to the evidence. Sometimes it detracts from the evidence. It all depends on the facts and circumstances. I think the larger impact that I see in our community right now is the heavy reliance upon social media as if it was a person's source of news. We've had a great change in local media. Local media has been subject to a lot of economic pressures and has receded greatly in communities all across the nation, not just this state and not just this community. Local newspapers, local radio stations, local television market coverage have all kind of pulled back. And as that has happened, then we have seen an explosion in the exchange of comments and opinions on local events on social media. And we've seen these pages, Facebook pages, social media pages that have sprung up and offer themselves as if they are a source of news, and they're not. They're just a place where people can say whatever they want to say.
Right.
And they do so oftentimes with total and reckless disregard for the truth of what's going on. And they're so subject to being manipulated and used by people who have agendas. And so the kinds of things that we had trusted media in the past because of the ethics of the profession of journalism to not do, they have no problem doing. And so it's created this problem where it has such a huge impact on public opinion. Everybody getting their news from social media needs to take a step back and recognize that what people say on social media is no different than the old, pass it on game that used to play in school.
Yeah.
Where something that's said by one person into whispered into another person's ear turns out to be totally different than what the last person in the line heard.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on social media. It really is. People are not getting facts straight, and it's really no fault of their own. It's just a matter of it's all garbled to begin with. And when it's passed on in an imperfect manner, it only gets more garbled.
Yeah. And like you said, unfortunately, it seems to be getting worse. Do you think part of that is because we're living in a society now where people want things instantaneously, as at the snap of a finger? They want to see the headline. They don't want to read the story.
Well, there's that. And you're right that people, well, I don't know that that's a change, that people have always wanted satisfaction as quickly as they can receive it, that they want to see what they believe to be justice done this minute.
Yeah.
And the way our system works isn't that way. So I've always faced that as a prosecutor, that as a prosecutor, I work in a system where You know, the accused has rights, and there's a process, and judges control how quickly cases get resolved, not prosecutors and not defense attorneys. We just are parties in either side of the transaction, so to speak. And so under the circumstances, cases can drag out for a really long time if a judge allows it. And that's not quick enough for public sentiment. Not quick enough at all.
No. That one of the questions that I had for you, too, was with if there's an investigation out there or something that has happened, and there's multiple agencies that are investigating the same thing, and it can be anything from a car accident to maybe financial theft, anything can be subject to this.
We don't have to go very far to find instances where things are being investigated not only by multiple different agencies, but also for multiple different purposes.
Right.
Sometimes agencies have internal investigations, and yet there's also a criminal investigation that's being done, sometimes in that agency, sometimes by a different agency. And then you might also have various administrative inquiries going on that are parallel to but involve the same facts. And so you have all of these different players, so to speak, in the game. And it seems really complex, but actually the way that everything is set up, each one of those follows its own track and will wind up at a result in due time.
Have you had this, and I'm going to assume that you probably have, for as many years as you've been involved in this, have you had instances where you've had multiple agencies, and I'm going to say, let's go the state police investigating something that a county is investigating, that maybe a city is investigating. Like you said, they're all looking at it from different aspects. When they bring the evidence to you to look at, how do you decide what agency takes precedence over another agency?
It depends on the nature of the investigation and the way that within that investigation, the evidence was collected. One of the key areas that can cause limitations is an internal investigation done within a police agency. There's case law that says that the employee within the police agency has to respond to questions from their employer. But because their employer is a government actor, that if they are compelled to respond to questions in that internal investigation, then their responses can't be used in a criminal investigation, nor any evidence that's derived from their responses. So usually what happens in that instance is that the criminal investigation goes first to avoid having anything come out of the internal investigation that would interfere with what could be used in the criminal investigation. But in the criminal investigation, a person who's in a position where they're facing being accused of a crime, they have rights. They have a privilege against self-incrimination. They can't be made to answer questions in a criminal investigation. If they're in custody, they have a right to the presence of a lawyer when they're responding to questions. So there are rights, and there are circumstances that can lead to the person who is the target, the person under suspicion in the criminal investigation, won't answer questions in the criminal investigation. So it winds up, the criminal investigation is concluded, decision is made, and then the investigation passes back to the investigating agency for the internal investigation, which is an administrative type of investigation, for them to conclude. And as they conclude, they can actually make the employee respond to questions. So there's this process of back and forth, and each one follows its own track, and they all wind up being concluded based on the rules that are applicable to each type of investigation.
When you're looking at a criminal investigation, and let's say that criminal investigation it's run its course, it's been through the judicial system, whether it was a guilty verdict or a non-guilty, however it ended up, then you can, the victim has the opportunity to go in from the other side and be able to do a non Thank you, that's the word I was looking for.
Civil litigation is always available to persons who are victims of crime. Usually the type of theory of action that's available to them is a lawsuit that would be called a tort. So a civil suit for wrong against their person. And so that is something that they have to bring on their own. And typically in order to be able to do that effectively, they would need the assistance of a lawyer. But they can initiate that. They don't have to wait for the criminal to get done. They can initiate it whenever they wish. Tort claim actions are actually limited, that you have to bring in within 2 years of the event or occurrence. And if the tort claim is against a government actor, there are actually timelines where you have to give notice to the local entity or the state entity within, for the state specifically, 180 days that you have to give notice that, hey, I'm going to sue you, state, because you did me wrong. And so that notice has to be given, and the state has to be given a chance to respond. And then local units of government, usually the notice has to go to what's called their loss prevention, which is their insurance carrier.
When multiple agencies are investigating similar actions and everybody's got their own evidence, do they share evidence with each other at some point in time, or do they have to wait until their investigation is done before they can make that available for someone else?
Well, information that's gathered in the course of litigation is gathered in the process of the lawsuit that's called discovery. And so it's not just, you know, here, help yourself kind of offer. It's done formally with written requests being tendered to people who are witnesses, people who are parties, follows different rules. It's under the trial rules that attorneys follow. And those requests are submitted and have to be responded to. And if responses aren't received, then the parties are able to ask for the intervention of the court to make have the court informed as to what's going on. Hey, I asked them for this. They didn't give it to me. Will you order them to give it to me? That kind of thing goes on.
What are you seeing now? I mean, I'm not talking locally. What are you seeing not only at the state level, but even at the federal level that is changing the way the court systems work? I mean, I know laws are in place, and those have to be followed to the basically the letter of the law. But what are you seeing that's making changes to the good pros and cons of things that are maybe changing the way we look at things and the way the course goes forward?
What I see is that many of our court systems are overwhelmed and their calendars are too full of cases, and they're not able to get to the cases quickly enough. And cases are languishing for a long time. Now, my direct experience is criminal cases. And I think that we're in far better shape on criminal cases than what I see on the civil side of the calendar for the courts. Not directly involved in the civil calendar, but I see what's happening on the civil calendar. And I read, in the press and the media about cases that are out there. And I see cases taking years and years to resolve. And so I don't, that is not good for the persons involved in litigation, typically.
Do you think the majority of this is just because we're shorthanded, for lack of a better term, shorthanded in being able to get these cases processed quicker?
Well, the limits on the budget that you were talking with Representative Agenda about have been present for a long time. And so there are limitations on the courts. There are limitations on prosecutors' offices. There are limitations on law enforcement budgets around the state. And certainly I think that those limits have had an effect on the number of cases. I mean, what I have seen over the years is I see the largest increase in new cases coming into my office as a local prosecutor when the local police departments are put in a position where on their budgets they can hire new personnel. So I'll tell you what that tells me. There's more out there for police officers to do than they can get to. I don't know if that's a bad thing, necessarily. I think it puts law enforcement in a position where they focus their time on the worst, and that's good. I think that's the way our system should work. But I'm just telling you that that means that there's a lot more out there that, you know, tickets that could be issued, arrests that could be made, that they're not getting to today because there's not enough personnel to get around. It's the same way within the court system. There's a lot more cases than can be resolved on today's calendar. They're stacked up, nose to tail, waiting for resolution. And yes, budget restrictions play a part in that. But also what plays a part in it is that we seem to be so much more litigious as a society. Everybody wants to run to the court for the judge to render a decision on their dispute rather than working it out between themselves. And so it's a variety of factors. I think it's very complex.
We have a call on the line. Caller, you have a question?
Oh, yes. My question is, how can Trump hold the hostage money? And because he's always saying, oh, you're not going to get that, and you're not going to get that. So how can he hold hostage?
I'm trying to understand what you're asking. What are you saying he's holding?
Oh, yeah, withholding, yeah.
Withholding what?
Funds.
Funds,
yeah.
Money. Well, the same way that our governor says that he is not going to collect the gas tax right now. It's an executive action.
Uh-huh.
So you have the ability as an executive in government today to make a decision. That decision will be reviewed, analyzed, determined on down the line whether or not it was lawful or unlawful and whether or not it should have been done that way or should not have been done that way. But today, as an executive, you get to make the decision. Governor Braun's not the first governor I've seen withhold collection of gas taxes. I've seen it in the past.
Okay, well, thank you. Everybody have a nice day.
You too.
Bye.
On that note, when they're reviewing it and trying to decide whether or not that's a good thing or not, ultimately, who can reverse that? Is it our Congress that can reverse that, or does it have to go through the judicial system to be able to reverse that?
Both sides, other branches of government have the ability to address. The legislature passes the laws, and then the executive is obligated by our Constitution to faithfully execute the laws, and then our judicial branch determines what the laws mean. So they all get a shot.
That makes it interesting to be able to have that multifaceted look at it. But that was part of the reason why the Founding Fathers set up the three branches of government to begin with.
It is, so that there are checks and balances, because the primary fear that our Founding Fathers had was the experience that they'd had with a king from England who was imposing taxes that they felt were not right. That was one of the driving factors in the founding of our country.
I know we're pushing the time clock, but I know you have work that you need to get to. One last question for you before you cut out of here. You were talking about, you know, the backlog, especially on the civil side.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything, in your opinion, is there anything that we can look at that maybe our legislators can look at to modify or change that so that maybe everybody and their brother can't run to the civil courts just to take care of an argument that they honestly should be able to take care of themselves as grown adults?
I don't know that the legislature looks at it as an issue of restricting access to the courts. I think that they wouldn't want to do that, and I agree that they should not want to do that. The laws themselves, with regard to people bringing frivolous, baseless lawsuits, judges actually control doing something about that. I don't see them doing very much about that. I see instances of certain persons who repeatedly file frivolous lawsuits and no repercussions to the person who does that. Some of those are people in certain communities, and they're known for doing it. And some of them are people who are like inmates in the Department of Corrections, who are just highly litigious about every manner of thing going on. And there's just not much pushback on any of that at all. So under the circumstances, the overall burdens on the system, in part it's a budget issue, in part it's a court management issue, having the resources to be able to put more cases through. But part of it, too, would be we have a lack of lawyers at this point. We don't have enough lawyers to serve the communities for the level of services that the communities apparently want. And so you need more people going to law school.
Same with medical schools. And, like we have and teachers.
And we have within our communities, we have segments of our communities that are largely underserved with legal services. They're just not being reached with legal services at all. And so I think the law schools can look at, hey, when we're training up and educating new lawyers, maybe we should be educating lawyers to serve particular segments of our communities.
What do you think is the reason why we're not seeing kids going through law school? You think it's more of a financial than anything else? Or
I'm sure finances are a large part of it, but I don't think it's the only part of it. I think that there's more of the way that lawyers are made fun of, that they're, you know, criticized. You make, you know, lawyer jokes and that kind of thing. I think I see the same thing in law enforcement too right now. It's just sentiment of, you know, why does a young person not want to be that? Well, because that's not cool. That's not a cool thing to be. So under the circumstances, that's part of it.
You've had a unique... And I know I said that was going to be the last question, but you just brought something to my mind. You've had a unique path. You started out in law enforcement, mm-hmm. and then you've gone through the process, and now you're the prosecutor. Do you think because of your unique past, you obviously have a different view of everything and a way to analyze things?
Every person is formed by their background. Yeah. I mean, I could have taken an entirely different path. I decided I wanted to be a lawyer when I was 12 years old, watching the Watergate hearings on television the summer I was 12. And when I initially went to undergraduate school, I thought I was going to be a patent lawyer. I thought I was going to be involved in computer language and hardware. And at that time, the Commodore 64 had just come out, and the first Apple hadn't been made, computer, not fruit.
Yeah.
And so under the circumstances, I thought I was going to go that way. And then after a year and a half in engineering at Purdue, I was bored. I mean, the calculator I was carrying around was a brick. It was heavy. Okay, I didn't want to do that anymore. Okay. And so under the circumstances, at least I was past the slide rule days. Okay,
sure.
Give me that. But
yeah.
They just stopped using slide rules.
Well, yeah, okay. I know the calculators you're talking about. The things were huge.
Yeah. And so I decided instead to go into social sciences as my undergraduate, but always with the idea, whether it was when I started out in engineering or I started out in social sciences, that it was going to be a pre-law degree and that I was going to go on to law school. I only became a trooper first because I was married and our first child was born a month after I graduated undergrad. And so I needed a job. I had a family to support. And so life kind of determines your path. You determine your interests and you have to keep pursuing them. Anybody who wants to be a lawyer that I've ever had a chance to talk to, I've always told them, figure out what your interests are. Pursue that interest first and then put law on top of it.
Do you think it would behoove maybe future students to find a way to learn more about the law enforcement side of it?
I mean, my office offers intern opportunities. Local law enforcement agencies offer interns and ride-along opportunities. to give people some exposure, to let them see, like my experience and like many people in college, after you start in a particular field, you decide, well, maybe I need to change this up a little bit. You determine what color your parachute is, so to speak, okay? And so under the circumstances, yeah, you have to get exposure, and you have to actually experience things before you can make solid decisions. So I encourage people to do that, yes.
Well, Tony, it's always great to have you in. I love our conversations, and I know I don't have a whole lot more of these coming down the pipeline, but thank you always for coming in.
Oh, you're quite welcome.
You know the door is always open if you ever have anything that you want to come in and talk about. And for those of you that are listening out there, I really wish more people would call in and ask questions, because this man is a wealth of knowledge. Don't laugh. I know you don't like anybody tuning your own home.
I have people call into my office and ask questions.
Do they?
And they ask questions about things that are going on. And I don't mind that at all. And they're welcome to call my office, 659-6350, with their questions. I can't always give them the answers they want to hear.
No.
Because my answers will be based on the laws and the facts as I know them. But I'll be more than happy to answer the questions.
No, well, and we appreciate that. And we appreciate you coming on the Party Line and taking time out of your day to come here and if nothing else, satisfy my you know, my thirst for the knowledge and understanding of everything that goes on. So we want to thank everybody. This has been Party Line. Monday, our guest will be Blake Dollier of NDOT and Sean Reeves from the Boone County Chamber. So stay tuned for that. But everybody have a great weekend. Enjoy it. It is going to get a little cooler out. So if you got plants already out, you may have to cover them up before it's over with. Thank you to our guest, Tony Somers, Clinton County Prosecutor. And also thank you to Mark Ginniff for coming in. Everybody have a great weekend.